The following paid program is furnished by Recovery Radio. It's for basic entertainment and informational purposes only and is solely responsible for its content. It does not necessarily reflect the views of Cumulus Media, its management, or its staff.
This is Recovery Radio, the first radio show in Rhode Island to offer useful information for the purpose of helping men and women suffering from alcohol and other addictions. Recovery Radio's goal is to raise awareness in the state and is dedicated to improving the outcome of those with addictions. Recovery Radio, hosted by John Tassoni, is presented by Phoenix House of New England. Call John now at 437-5000 or 888-345-0790. Now, John Tassoni.
Welcome to Recovery Radio. I'm your host, John Tassoni. Another beautiful Monday. A little crappy weather on the weekend with the storm, but hey, it's winter. In the studio today, Kodak and Miss Sharon Morello. She is a BSN RN, and Sharon is a vice president of clinical operations for Kodak. Welcome, Sharon, and thank you for joining me today.
Thank you, John. Glad to be here.
So tell my listeners about Kodak.
Kodak?
As a whole, and then we'll go into the seven different locations.
Okay. So Kodak as a whole, organization started in the 1970s. It was actually the first opiate treatment program in the state of Rhode Island and the only one that was in existence even in early 80s. Back in the early 80s, Kodak had a waiting list of 2 years before people could get into opiate treatment back then.
Good thing we don't have that now.
Good thing we don't have it now. And certainly the game changer was in the 1984 when HIV and AIDS came into the picture, and we really in the state of Rhode Island expanded beyond, and there are no longer any waiting lists to get into methadone treatment today. So we have multiple locations across the state. We have one in East Providence. We have one in Providence, two in Providence, actually, one on Huntington Avenue and one on North Main Street. We have one in Cranston. We have one in Newport. And I think, so let me think, Wakefield. And then we have just opened another location, and that is on the Pastore campus with a, in Cranston, where Reagan Building is for Ellen Slater Hospital, and we have a clinic that's just opened up there.
Let me ask you this, Sharon. How many patients do you attend to there? I mean, all over.
All over. It varies given day to day, but I would say averaging around 2,300 patients. In all those locations. That's probably not including some of the people that we care for in the prison right now, because we have programs inside the prison.
Yeah, and I want to talk about that, too.
And
yeah,
currently serving about 230 men and women in the prison with medication-assisted treatment. So I'm not going to add those people to our census in the community. So I would say in the community, not incarcerated, 2,300 patients on any given day. There's not all the same patients,
right?
And not all those patients are in opiate treatment programs. We have drug-free programs where people come in for a general outpatient counseling. They can come in for counseling for their substance use disorders, and many of those patients are coming to us because they've been put in a way where they need to come because of DCYF, because of probation and parole, and for other reasons, or because that's where they want to be. So not all the patients get medication, but a good portion of our patients do. And patients can be, you know, substance use disorders of anything, alcohol, cocaine, whatever it may be. But the majority of our patients that we serve are opiate use disordered patients.
How long have you been in this field?
Since about 1985. I've been a nurse since 1975, so I was only two when I got my nursing degree.
Wow.
I was very young, right?
Yeah. Very smart.
I know.
So let me ask you this question, Sharon, because it's asked of me a lot through emails. Have you seen a different way of life pertaining to, number one, treatment options, number two, access, number three, recovery?
Yeah. I have. I was very fortunate back
when you were two.
When I was two, yeah. In the late 80s and early 90s, when we really began to get into the recovery movement, and Rhode Island was participating with other New England states to start recovery centers. And we hadn't really gotten there yet. And I was very fortunate to be in some of those New England meetings where people told their stories of recovery. And because I had been a treatment provider and a nurse for all those years, I really came from the treatment focus, and I really, you know, focused specifically on treatment. And a lot of times we didn't see people in recovery because they were out and about doing the things after we had taken care of them, and we just didn't get to see them anymore. So I was very impressed with people who were in recovery, and just the admiration I had for them changed the way I looked at it personally for me. Not just looking at treatment alone, but looking at the whole continuum of people's care. And I think we're better at that, but still I think sometimes we separate recovery and treatment too much. We really need to put them together more than we do. And we've moved in Rhode Island in a tremendous place to move towards recovery. I go to other places across the country. I actually get to teach in various parts across the country at a national level for opiate use disorders, and get to see in other parts of the country where they're really struggling with some of these initiatives, with the recovery components. They're struggling with getting people into treatment. There are more, I think sometimes we think we have a lot of barriers to treatment here, but we got to travel across the country to see that we actually do it.
Yeah.
We actually do it pretty well here and eliminated a lot of barriers. Back, I think one of the complicating things is that, and it's still here, and I don't know if it'll be gone when I finally retire, but we have got to get rid of the stigma around this. Even when I'm training and teaching nurses and different people across the country and in the state, the question that gets asked for me is, you know, how long do people need to be on medication for their disease? Well, you know, it's a chronic disease, and if they're doing real well on their medication, why would we take them off of it? We don't take diabetics off their insulin, and I don't take schizophrenic patients off their antipsychotics, and sometimes we just don't take patients with acute chronic opiate use disorder off their medications either. So it's trying to get people to understand. Fortunately, in Rhode Island, they've given us a mandate that all nurses in the state have to get 2 hours of education.
And I think that same thing with doctors now, too.
I think it's more for them as far as the number of hours. But I know for nursing, in order to renew your license, so I would say in the past 2 years, I've trained over probably about 600 or 700 nurses across the spectrum. So hospitals, nursing homes, surgical centers, outpatient surgical centers, school nurses, all of them are coming forward to get that training because they have to. But at the end of the day, I think about 50% of them really learn something while they're sitting in the classroom. So we're moving in that direction.
So when you have all these nurses in one classroom, what are you actually teaching them? Is it science, symptoms? Is it...
It's science. Okay. It's science. So what I try to do is teach them what's really happening in the brain. Why do we call this a brain disease, and why is it a chronic disease? And for chronic diseases, we don't cure chronic diseases. We only correct them. And so, you know, if we can't cure diabetes and we can't cure renal failure, but we can correct it and we can give people quality. And so teaching about the reward center in the brain, what happens to the patient's frontal lobe that's not working really well, you know, some of the chronic damage that happens along the way, and why we need to do these different things to get people to have some quality of life, because it's really about their quality of life, not what we think is important for them.
And it's too, you know, I've had many people on the show that talk about when they go into treatment, what happens after they're in treatment. So I want to pick up when we come back, because we got to take a break so I can pay the bills.
Yep.
You're listening to Recovery Radio. I'm your host, Sean Tassone. We'll be right back.
Sponsored by TheraWorks Relief. To relieve muscle cramps in your legs and feet, use TheraWorks Relief. This fast-acting foam can also prevent muscle cramps. Get TheraWorks Relief today at select CVS and Rite Aid pharmacies or TheraWorksRelief.com.
Do drugs or alcohol control your life? If you're struggling with alcohol or drug use, help is available, and there is hope for recovery. Neighborhood Health Plan of Rhode Island covers many treatment options for members who qualify. Call today to learn more. Neighborhood makes health care easy and offers the lowest priced health plans for Rhode Islanders. Call today at 1-800-459-6019 or visit Neighborhood online at nhpri.org.
Trying to quit smoking? No luck? Cigarette smoking and tobacco use are the most preventable cause of illness and death in the country. Kodak has been providing effective, respectful, and compassionate treatment, recovery support, and prevention services since 1971. Kodak's trained and certified tobacco treatment specialists use the latest practices and information in a clinical setting that supports your efforts to be tobacco-free. Covered by health insurance, call Kodak today, 275-5037. That's 275-5037.
I'm Jay Farner from Quicken Loans. The rate today on a 30-year fixed-rate mortgage is 3.875%, APR 4.05%. But choosing the right mortgage lender involves so much more than just a rate. Only Quicken Loans has earned 11 J.D. Power Awards. No other lender comes close to that level of client satisfaction. And we invented Rocket Mortgage. It gives our clients a simpler, hassle-free way to get a mortgage completely online in minutes. No one else has anything like it. And our people, each one of our 17,000-plus team members throughout Detroit, Cleveland, and Phoenix provides absolute client satisfaction each and every day. So why would you go anywhere else to get your mortgage? Go to America's number one online lender. Call Quicken Loans today at 800-QUICKEN or go to rocketmortgage.com for the best mortgage experience on earth. That's 800-QUICKEN.
Call for cost information and conditions. Equal housing lender licensed in all 50 states. NMLSconsumeraccess.org number 3030.
Home foreclosure can be a nightmare. A couple of missed house payments, and before you know it, your house is being sold right from underneath you. You don't know where you or your family are going to live, or even where you're going to spend the night. If you don't think it can happen to you or anyone you know, think again. You don't have to face this alone. Certified housing counselors from the National Foundation for Credit Counseling are available to work with you and your lender. And this service is completely free. The sooner you call, the better your options. Call 866-687-6322 or visit mortgagehelpnow.org to request a free consumer education DVD called Avoiding Foreclosure, Working with a Certified NFCC Housing Counselor. This nightmare does not have to happen to you. That number again, 866-687-6322 or visit mortgagehelpnow.org. This has been a public service message from the National Foundation for Credit Counseling.
Phoenix House of New England, a national nonprofit leader in treatments of substance use disorders and co-occurring behavioral health issues. Phoenix House provides comprehensive care in Rhode Island and throughout New England, from medically monitored withdrawal services to residential and outpatient treatment for adults. For teens, we offer both comprehensive outpatient services. At Phoenix House, our skilled professional staff is committed to helping you achieve a better way of life through recovery. Major insurance plans and credit cards are accepted, and a sliding fee scale is available. So give us a call at 1-800-DRUG-HELP. That's 1-800-378-4435. Or go online and visit us at phoenixhouse.org. You or someone you love can begin a new life in recovery today. Call Phoenix House. Accredited by the CARF, the Commission on Accreditation and Rehabilitation Facilities is a national standard of excellence. Phoenix House of New England is the proud sponsor of Recovery Radio.
AM 790 Talk and Business. This is Recovery Radio with John Tassone.
Welcome back to Recovery Radio. I'm your host, John Tassone. Kodak is in the house today. Miss Sharon Morello is here, and Sharon is a BSN slash RN. She's been an RN since she was two. And Sharon is also the Vice President of Clinical Operations at Kodak. Sharon, welcome and thank you for joining us today. Someone with your long-standing career, it's like having a person who devotes their life to helping people. And I think that's what you have done.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's a funny thing because in 1985, I finally had three children that were in school full time, and I could get a daytime job and not work Saturday nights and weekends in the hospital. And I went to find my first job, and my first job was in a methadone treatment program, and I was the director of nursing. I don't know why I was the director of nursing. I had never worked in a methadone program before, and I didn't know anything about the care, and the patients actually taught me a lot, and the staff taught me a lot. And what I found out in that very first couple of months working with those patients is that I totally enjoyed taking care of them. I don't know why, but I do know that I saw in them an opportunity to get better. I saw as a nurse with a nursing hat that there were people with a chronic disease that I just didn't have all the answers to how to help them, and that I knew that if we did more research and we did more evidence, that we could figure out how to do this better. And I think we're actually there today. Mm. We've got evidence. We've got 40, 50 years of evidence that says this is how we should treat people and help them get quality of life. We just got to listen to it. We've got to follow through. But having that niche at the time, I think, helped me gain the specialty in the area. There was not a lot of the people who were interested in doing this work.
Right.
So.
And that brings me to another thing where we're having problems with retention.
Yeah.
Not a lot of people want to get into the field because it's a difficult field to be in.
It is.
And it's a difficult situations that you run into every day with someone who is addicted.
Right.
So I know you teach a lot. So I'm sure that you can tell us a lot of stories about different classes that you have and how things evolve. But is it different now teaching the, and I'll use this word, I'm not sure if it's the correct word, the millennials now, the young nurses, both male and female. Is it more difficult now to teach than it was years ago when you first started teaching?
No, it's not more difficult. I think the difference is that we have such a young workforce right now, mm-hmm. And it's a big workforce. We hire more people across the state than we ever did in this field. And remember when we first started talking today, back in the early 80s, there was only one methadone program in the whole state with a two-year waiting list. So today there are probably about 5,500 to 6,000 patients in opiate treatment programs on methadone maintenance across the state. Mm-hmm. There's a big difference. So you think about the workforce that had to get hired over these years to take care of that. Yeah. Also, patients on Suboxone, approximately 5,500 patients on Suboxone in the state of Rhode Island. So we have a lot of people, a lot of people in treatment, and that means that we've had to increase our workforce. But right. The problem is, and across the workforce, is a lot of young people coming into the field. And I don't know that everybody gets this hands-on kind of training as best they can when they're in school. And when they get out, we've got to help them with that. Hmm. And a lot of times we've got new evidence-based treatments that need to get rolled out. And who do they get rolled out to? So I think the workforce development is a big issue today, hmm. only because of the volume of people we're talking about. And let's just face it, the pay isn't all the best when you come to this kind of field. You know, you go to 4 years of college. You come out, you get your bachelor's degree, then you've got to go and get some kind of credentialing to be licensed to be a chemical dependency professional. And then you're still not making a ton of money. So education is one thing, but retention is really a whole different ballgame. Mm-hmm. And I don't think it's unique to us, and I don't think it's unique to Rhode Island. I think it's a national issue around workforce development.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the reasons, too, why the governor put a commission together to look at workforce development because, I hear it working at the council, too, that, you know, people jump for 25 cents an hour from one facility to another. And it's like a vicious, mouse in a training ring that keeps going around, around, around.
Right.
So I think the state as a whole needs to look at the industry and hopefully put some money in it so the retention is there. It's like anything else. When you see people coming in and you see different faces when you walk in, especially at the clinic, if you see different right. people every week, different, you got to start to scratch your head like, you know, I'm a patient here, but, you know, how long you been here? Oh, 2 weeks?
Right.
You know, right. There's no more long range people because they're jumping around.
Right, right. And people don't jump around just for a couple of dollars lots of times. Lots of times it's because they're happy mm-hmm. where they're working. So yeah. It's not, you know, a lot. If you do surveys of people, they might jump for a dollar or two, but not for a quarter.
Right.
If they're happy with where they are, they'll stay. Excuse me. I think one of the concerns I have is that we don't have a lot of older people staying.
Right.
So who's helping them? You know, who's monitoring the young, who's teaching the young, who's, giving them some direction and supervision if a lot of our older people who have, well, we shouldn't say older, we should say seasoned, right? Seasoned sounds better.
But the other thing is, too, the institutional knowledge.
Right.
When you're in a organization like Kodak, the institutional knowledge, if you have people jumping on a six-month, a yearly basis, and that institutional knowledge that you have goes out the window. We'll just use you as an example. You, someone who's longstanding with Kodak, if you were to leave, that is a huge void in Kodak's top management.
That's correct. And what we need to do is to make sure that we have succession planning. So we're currently doing that right now. In fact, I've just developed and put together a workforce task group at Kodak to look at how we orient new people, how we bring them on board, how do we do competency training for them, all those kind of things to give them all the skill sets. And then it's not just what we think works, but actually bringing the evidence-based practice to what we call the bedside. And so it's, you know, how do you take it from the lab and bring it to where the patient is and the staff who are working with the patient so they can implement those evidence-based practices? And you have to stay on top of your game. Even if you've got longevity in your workforce, if your workforce hasn't been continuing to be educated, then just giving, you know, a lot of stuff that they've known in the past, but do they know what's new?
Right. And it's a constant training and retraining
it never
of employees.
Ends, right. It never ends.
Because of new techniques, new ways to do things. You know, I was most impressed a couple of months ago when I went to Kodak on Huntington Avenue and spoke to the staff and seeing how the people come in off the street, get their medicine, and they leave.
Yep.
You know, and I'll be very honest with you. I was there early in the morning. Cadillacs, BMWs, high professional people,
right.
Which I think a lot of people on the outside, they don't see that. They just see it as a 20-something-year-old kid with 15 to 20 tattoos, the earrings, the whole bit.
Yeah,
but
we can stereotype that.
But they don't see the professionals that are productive citizens now.
No. So we have, and anybody could say that in the state of Rhode Island, a growing population and an older population of people who are in opiate use disorder treatment, who are in methadone treatment, who have been there for a long period of time. And they're professionals. They work full-time. They have full-time jobs. There's a good percentage of our population that have full-time work. And because they've done so well, and I'm going to say that they're in medication-assisted recovery, that they take their medication.
I like that.
They take their medication every day. They do what the things that they need to do to be responsible to their family, to their children, to their job. They vote. As far as I can see, they're doing everything right that anybody else who's got a good quality of life would do. And they take this medication to help them do that. And it helps normalize them and keep them safe. We do know over the 50 years of research we've done on this that if we take people off before they're ready to come off of it, the chances of them relapsing are going to be great. And we can't afford people to relapse right now because it's just too dangerous for that to happen. So, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of professional people out there who only have to come to the clinic now once, every 2 weeks. Yeah. And they're doing beautifully in their work. And, you know, why would they change what's working for them? You know, from a medical perspective, I wouldn't change a medical treatment plan for any other chronic disease if it was working. So I think that's part of the things that we've got to get people to move on, you know, recognizing that this can be something that's a lifelong treatment for them. You know, would we all love to get off our medication and not have to take it anymore? But we need to stay healthy when we do it.
And I think that's where the average person, when they look at someone from Kodak, or some of the others that do medication-assisted treatment, they don't see it as a whole picture. They just see it as a individual who's going to get their Suboxone or they're going to go get their medicine. And, you know, after they take their medicine, they go hang around at the corner, you know, deal drugs. That's not it at all.
No.
There's a big misconception about that.
It really is. So at most of the programs, they've got Obviously, the substance use counseling services, but I think I can say that Kodak's added on so many additional things to really give that holistic approach for the patient.
Right.
So we have mental health services with psychiatric care and prescribing psychiatry to help patients with co-occurring disorders. That is really a new, over the past couple of years in some of our programs, just making all a difference for the patients, because 70% of the patients do have co-occurring disorders. So to treat one thing and not the other doesn't make any sense, and so we're trying to treat the whole patient. All of the OTPs, opiate treatment programs, have health homes. We're really proud of some of the health home work that we're doing with the nurses and the staff, integrating medical care into that treatment so they can be part of that. We're also recognizing that we have patients that come and got into their disorder from a pain perspective. And so a lot of our patients are coming to us with pain as well. And we've been working on getting new programs in around massage therapy and programs around acupuncture and those kind of things, alternatives to pain and different kind of things that people can use to give their world a whole perspective. But you got to take care of the whole person, not just pieces of the person.
Right.
I said that we're really had made major changes in doing that.
All right, we're going to take another quick break. You'll listen to Recovery Radio. I'm your host, John Tassone. We'll be right back.
The journey to hope, health, and healing guides you to a successful recovery. A full-service outpatient center, The Journey treats the whole patient, not just the addiction, offering high-quality medication-assisted treatment, behavioral health counseling, and lifestyle support services tailored to your needs. Experts are on site to help with any health insurance issues. Call The Journey at 941-4488. That's 941-4488. Get into recovery today.
Dominion Diagnostics is a proud sponsor of Recovery Radio and is a leading Rhode Island laboratory that provides drug testing solutions across the country to improve patient care and treatment outcomes in addiction medicine. Dominion Diagnostics delivers objective clinical information and unique clinical support, education, and consultation along every step of the continuum of care, from screening to assessment to treatment planning to recovery support solutions. Additional information, news, and resources are available at DominionDiagnostics.com.
The Army National Guard is committed to keeping the country safe and our communities secure. Composed of hundreds of thousands of citizen soldiers from all walks of life and in every corner of America, the Guard is always ready to respond to local or national emergencies. The Army National Guard reacts to domestic operations in each of America's 54 states and territories, including Puerto Rico, the Virgin Islands, Guam, and the District of Columbia. Each state National Guard's unique domestic role is to act as the first line of defense in support of civil authorities in their state. The Guard's emergency responses include search and rescue missions for floods, combating wildfires, hurricane or tornado recovery, and the presidential inauguration. The Army National Guard. We are always ready. We are always there. And in every state and territory, we stand guard for our communities. To learn more, log on to NationalGuard.com.
Sponsored by the Rhode Island Army National Guard. Aired by the Rhode Island Broadcasters Association and this station.
Soldiers returning with traumatic brain injuries or other serious battle wounds often spend weeks or months in a VA hospital or other rehab facility. DVDs for Vets is collecting DVDs and portable players for distribution in our community and nationwide. Many of us take for granted our access to everyday enjoyments, and DVDs for Vets needs your help in giving these injured soldiers some diversions from the monotony of a hospital stay during recovery. To donate new or used DVDs or to learn more about this worthy cause, please go to www.dvdsforvets.org.
Do you or anyone you know need help with basic needs like heating assistance, food and shelter, or clothing? Or how about after-school programs, family counseling, housing assistance, and more? If so, dial United Way 211 in Rhode Island 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
Hi, you've reached United Way 211 of Rhode Island. How may I help you?
And it's confidential, multilingual, and free.
I was so glad the 211 was able to help you. Call anytime.
Dominion Diagnostics is a proud sponsor of Recovery Radio and a leading national medical laboratory that provides drug testing solutions to improve patient care and treatment outcomes in addiction medicine. With its main laboratory located in Rhode Island, Dominion Diagnostics has remained the leading provider of drug testing services for the local treatment community for almost two decades. Across the country, addiction treatment providers rely on Dominion to deliver objective clinical information and unique clinical support, education, and consultation along every step of the continuum of care, from screening to assessment to treatment planning to recovery support solutions. Dominion Diagnostics is known in the community for its focus on improving treatment outcomes and enhancing the quality of life for patients and their families. Additional information, news, and resources are available at DominionDiagnostics.com and on Dominion's Twitter and Facebook feeds. That's DominionDiagnostics.com.
AM 790 Talk and Business. This is Recovery Radio with John Tassone.
I'm your host, John Tassone. Miss Sharon Morello is in the house. And Sharon is a RN and a Vice President of Clinical Operations for Kodak. Welcome, Sharon, and thank you for joining me today. I know this is your first time on the radio. You're doing one heck of a job.
Thank you, John.
One heck of a job. I want to talk about pain management.
Okay.
We had talked earlier that this was a new field that people in your position were looking at to help people with chronic pain, whether it be acupuncture, yoga, whatever. Let's talk about that.
Okay. So, you know, when we got into taking care of pain many years ago, and of course this has been well known in the medical field, is that, you know, pretty much thought that if we had somebody who came in with acute pain and we gave them opiates for their pain management, and opiates do work great for getting rid of pain, and they're necessary for a lot of patients. But we were told, and we thought, that if we prescribed short-term to somebody who was truly in acute pain, and that when we stopped it, they wouldn't develop a dependency. And so I think it's important to know the difference between what's a dependency and what we think is an addiction. You know, a dependency is, you're going to get that dependency, excuse me, with an opiate in a short period of time, even just a couple of weeks, a month. That means if you stop taking the medication, you're going to feel sick. You're going to have withdrawal syndrome.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean that you necessarily have addictive behaviors where you're going out to seek more or you're developing a tolerance and you need to take more to feel better. Those are two different things. So a lot of people developed a dependency on their opiates from pain management, even when it was an acute pain. And when they were taken off their medications, they got sick. And they needed some kind of relief. And many people sought relief in different ways, whether it was buying illicit medications on the street, or perhaps they could switch over to heroin. And if they switched to heroin and they used it intranasally, well, that's not, you know, in their eyes as bad as IV drug use. And so, you know, well, maybe I can get away with doing something like that. And then in a short period of time, people develop a tolerance. And they need to take more to feel okay. They're not taking more to get high. They're taking more to not be sick.
Right.
And so with this progression, we can see them actually transferring to IV heroin use in a short period of time. And 3 to 6 months, we have a full-blown opiate use disorder with an addiction on top of a dependency, if that makes any sense. Mm. In 2012, 2013, 14, and even 15, the use of prescription opiates was above and beyond that what we should be prescribing. And in fact, every person in the country could have a 30-day supply based on the amount of prescriptions that are out there. Rhode Island did some serious work to get changes in prescribing practices and developed PDMPs, you know, patient management systems, so that people could see if they've been prescribed other meds. We changed some of the regulations about how many prescriptions could be given out.
Right.
Those kind of things.
Doctor shopping.
All of that. And we made a big dent in that. And then in 2016 and 15, 16, instead of seeing a decrease in the overdoses, we actually saw an increase. And I think it was because of the fentanyl on the street.
Right.
We had really decreased the overdoses from prescription using. When in fact, back in 2012, 13, or 14, they were the highest overdoses across the state. The fentanyl has been a game changer that's been difficult for us. But we do know now that prescribing opiates to people for chronic pain is not an answer. And for patients who have been in a lot of pain, and they are legitimately in pain, using the opiates to help them with their pain has not helped them. Their pain is still there. They're increasing their tolerance. And it's just like a vicious circle that nobody can seem to get out of. The way we take care of pain is going to be different in the future, and it's already started. We're developing a pain solution program over at one of our clinics that's just new and opened up. It's called Ellen Slater Center of Excellence. It's at the Reagan Building at Ellen Slater Hospital in Cranston. And we'll be working with pain specialists and neuropsychiatry to really look at how do we manage pain. We can help people who have a primary care physician or a surgeon or somebody who's prescribing pain meds to them, and it's really not working. We can actually work with that primary care doc or that surgical person who's working with that patient to transition them to a pain clinic with us.
Right.
So get them off those heavy opiates onto a program, getting treatment, not only maybe with medication or not with without medication. It could be either or.
Right.
And we probably put them on right now what would be Suboxone for them to help. But working closely with their primary care doc and not just taking anybody in so that the docs just don't leave the patients hanging, but they gradually taper them down and help us get them onto that. Mm-hmm. Also working with acupuncture and to get acupuncture in and to work with massage therapy to help them with that, and then bring them in to help them with other kind of things that they may need help with. Many patients who come in with pain management issues who really have an opiate use disorder on top of it really don't want to talk about their opiate use disorder at the beginning. They just want their pain managed. And so that's where we start. And then we can work on the whole thing together.
Let me ask you this, because somebody just sent me a text message and an email pertaining to the opioids. What kind of side effects do people get from opioid use? Chronic use.
Well, it's a central nervous system depressant. So if people are using opiates for the treatment of pain, they're going to get some of that pain management taken care of.
Right.
But they're also going to feel, depending on the amount and the dose that they're using, they might look over-sedated. They might look sleepy. And obviously, if they're taking too much, they could overdose. And so overdose is really lack of oxygen and decreased respirations because it is a central nervous system depressant. The other concern that we have in the state of Rhode Island is a lot of people just don't use opiates alone. Sometimes they use them in combinations with other things, for instance, i.e. alcohol or benzodiazepines. So if you're using an opiate and you're also prescribed a benzodiazepine, which is also a central nervous system depressant, it just slows everything down. Your blood pressure goes lower, your heart rate goes lower, your respirations go lower, and when you combine those kind of medications together, it can cause
a recipe for disaster.
It's a recipe for disaster, and not just for people who are using illicitly. For our older population, if they've got pain and they are prescribed an opiate for their pain and they have a benzodiazepine and they have for their anxiety disorder, and then they have a medical comorbidity like a COPD or respiratory complications, then, you know, they're in line for a potential overdose that certainly is unintentional and probably should have a Narcan kit in their home just because they're an older adult with so many things combined.
Right.
The state of Rhode Island, we are still up there in the amount of benzodiazepines we prescribe, so we need to get a handle, you know, on that.
What is benzos?
It is a medication that slows everything down. It's used to be called a tranquilizer type of thing. It can be a muscle relaxant as well. And most people use it to take care of their anxiety. But in fact, it's only good for something acute, short-acting, and has never been effective for long-acting anxiety and nerves. So decreasing the people who are starting on it. But it is medication that is extremely addictive. People can get
extremely dangerous.
Extremely dangerous in combination with other things.
Right. I'm going to take a quick break, and I want to talk a little bit more about benzos when we come back. I'm starting to get a lot of messages about this.
Yep.
You're listening to Recovery Radio. I'm your host, Sean Tassone. We'll be right back.
Sponsored by TheraWorks Relief. To relieve muscle cramps in your legs and feet, use TheraWorks Relief. This fast-acting foam can also prevent muscle cramps. Get TheraWorks Relief today at select CVS and Rite Aid pharmacies or TheraWorksRelief.com.
Bridgemark is a treatment program that offers residential, outpatient, and intensive outpatient services. The residential program serves adult males suffering from chemical dependency. The outpatient and intensive outpatient programs serve people struggling with chemical dependency, codependency, gambling addiction, anger management, and domestic violence. They provide a respectful treatment environment to support healthy and lasting change. If any of these problems are impacting your life or those you care about, contact Bridgemark at 781-2700 for a confidential, comprehensive assessment.
Lean on me when you're not strong, and I'll be your friend. I'll help you.
If you're feeling low with nowhere to turn, call the Samaritans at 401-272-4044. It's free and confidential. 401-272-4044. This is Bill Withers. We all need somebody to lean on. When you do, the Samaritans are there.
Hiring is important. People are what make your business work. But how do you find the right talent? ZipRecruiter makes it simple. One click sends your job ad to over 100 of the web's leading job boards. But ZipRecruiter doesn't stop there. Their smart matching technology will instantly alert quality candidates about your job. That means you'll start getting great candidates with the right experience almost as soon as your job is posted. No wonder 80% of employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site in just one day. The right candidates are out there. This is how you find them. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
People from businesses of all sizes trust ZipRecruiter for their hiring needs. We're so confident ZipRecruiter will get you better results than anywhere else. We'll let you try it free. That's right, free. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/talk. That's ZipRecruiter.com/talk. ZipRecruiter.com/talk.
When antibiotics aren't needed, they won't help you, and the side effects could still hurt you. Don't share. Think twice. Seek advice. Antibiotics aren't always the answer. Only take antibiotics a health professional has prescribed. Be antibiotics aware. Visit health.ri.gov/antibiotics. Sponsored by the Rhode Island Department of Health and the Rhode Island Broadcasters Association.
Do you or anyone you know need help with basic needs like heating assistance, food and shelter, or clothing? Or how about after-school programs, family counseling, housing assistance, and more? If so, dial United Way 211 in Rhode Island 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
Hi, you've reached United Way 211 of Rhode Island. How may I help you?
And it's confidential, multilingual, and free.
I was so glad that 211 was able to help you. Call anytime.
Take your first step to the path to recovery today. Call Phoenix House at 1-800-378-4435, a national nonprofit leader in the treatment of substance use disorders and co-occurring behavioral health issues. Phoenix House provides comprehensive care for adults in Rhode Island and throughout New England, from medically monitored withdrawal services and residential and outpatient treatment, and for teens we offer both intensive comprehensive outpatient services. At Phoenix House, our highly professional staff is committed to helping you achieve a better way of life through recovery. Major insurance plans and credit cards are accepted, and a sliding fee scale is available. So give them a call at 1-800-378-4435 or go online and visit them at phoenixhouse.org. Phoenix House of New England, accredited by the CARF, the Commission on Accreditation and Rehabilitation Facilities, is a national standard of excellence. Phoenix House of New England is a proud sponsor of Recovery Radio.
AM 790 Talk and Business. This is Recovery Radio with John Tassone.
Welcome back to Recovery Radio. I'm your host, John Tassone. Kodak is in the house, Ms. Sharon Morello. And Sharon is a nurse, and she's also the Vice President of Clinical Operations at Kodak. So welcome, Director.
Thank you.
You're doing an outstanding job here on the radio today for your first time. Love to have you back, by the way.
Sure.
If we can fit it in your busy schedule. I want to go back to the issue of benzos. people hear it. People are not sure what they are, how much of an issue it is with benzos today. I always have this conversation with my 21-year-old and 18-year-old granddaughters about when they go to different places. You know, the date rape stuff that they put in the drinks, the stuff that the college kids are using now. The issue of being so, and I'll use the word, cheap slash affordable, has gotten to a point where so many young people are trying it for the first time, using it for the first time, and also, unfortunately, dying for the first time.
Right.
By using it.
Right. So benzodiazepines have been around a long time. I mean, in the, I remember back in the 70s and 80s, it was, you know, Valium, and then in the 80s and 90s, it was Xanax, and now it's still, you know, Xanax and Klonopin. Those are all the kind of names that you'll hear going around. It's all in the same family of benzodiazepines, and traditionally they've been used to help people with anxiety disorders and such, and people have used them pretty liberally in back in the 70s, 80s, and 90s. We still prescribe way too many benzodiazepines. In fact, I think Rhode Island is working really hard at changing some of those practices. Right. When you've got somebody that you've placed on benzos and they've been on it for a long period of time, that doesn't mean that everybody is abusing them. There are people who are taking benzodiazepines, and they've taken them for years and years and years. They've got a good benefit from them. They haven't increased their usage, so they haven't gotten more tolerant to it, and they haven't had to do any drug seeking because of it. But at the end of the day, if you were to take them off their benzodiazepines, they would be very sick. In fact, the place where benzo sits in the neuroreceptors in the brain is actually a place that's similar to where alcohol sits. In fact, when we take care of patients for alcohol withdrawal, we actually use benzodiazepines to help them withdraw slowly and safely because they kind of share the same neuroreceptor, which means that when you're dependent on benzodiazepines, withdrawal from that can be very life-threatening. So withdrawal from alcohol can be life-threatening depending on the patient. Benzodiazepines, it can be life-threatening. Those need to be done under medical supervised withdrawal and sometimes in a hospital setting. The key today is to not necessarily take everybody off the benzodiazepines that are on them, taking them properly, but it may be to think about not initiating new people onto benzodiazepines and what can we do to prevent the over-prescribing. And I think that in Rhode Island, we're starting to work on that, to think about who should be getting these medications and who shouldn't. The FDA has put a black box warning on opioids and benzodiazepines so that pull them up, they'll say, the black box says, you know, be careful, prescriber, that if you prescribe benzodiazepines and opiates together, that could be a combination for danger.
Right.
And so looking at that over time, trying to decrease the amount that we prescribe. And I think that we've got a good handle on doing some of that. It appears that some of the younger people don't always get all the education they need to get, so they really know what they're trying. Yeah, and younger people don't want to be told, you know, just say no or that's dangerous. They want to be educated. They want the information. They want to see the evidence-based stuff and the real scientific nature behind why this is what it is. So just telling them you shouldn't do that, I don't think is enough for the younger kids.
And you see that when you talk to young people today, and you hit the nail right on the head with education and information. The internet always doesn't tell the exact, issue when you do mix. They may leave a sentence or two out.
Right.
But that sentence or two could cost you life or death.
That's right. And combining all these central nervous system depressants is really the biggest issue. And people don't always know what they're taking. So if they're buying something on the street, it could be counterfeit. Right now, I think there are some, you know, prescription medications that people think they're buying, whether it's an OxyContin or this. They pay a certain amount for it, and actually it's counterfeit medication that's made up of a fentanyl or something else. So it's dangerous to just be buying stuff randomly off the street. It's always been dangerous. It's just a little bit more so than it ever was.
Well, you're kind in saying a little bit more. I think we are at the point now when
it's a game changer.
It's a game changer.
Yep.
You know, we were in, Dr. Storti and I were in Worcester last week and talking to other agencies.
Yep.
And a lot of them are talking about just China and the amount of fentanyl that's coming over here. And just one change of a molecule.
Yes.
Changes the whole game.
It changes the whole game. And in talking with the, you know, DEA and HIDA, you know, getting fentanyl here is actually pretty easy for China coming through. It's small. It can get through. It can get through in different places. It comes in little tiny packets. Its production is much cheaper. You know, opiates, heroin comes from poppy fields.
Hmm.
And poppy fields have to be cultivated.
Right.
And somebody's got to pick the poppy. So there's labor. There's it's weather-driven. And it comes in bulk. It's hard to move. So if you can find something to replace it that's cheap, easy to make, and easy to transport, why would you go back to transporting heroin?
Right.
I think the fear is that the heroin is not going to be is going to be something of the future, and our present opiate is going to be fentanyl. And if that's the case, then we need to stop thinking about just rescue and treatment. We need to think about prevention.
Mm. Well, that's one of the main things that we need to start getting the word out about prevention. And what you're buying on the street is not necessarily what you think you just bought.
That's right. That's
you know,
right.
Any substance that you put in that's far into your body today, you have to be extremely careful of.
Yep.
Whether it be heroin with fentanyl, and now the big thing is marijuana with fentanyl.
Right.
So.
And traditionally, we've had, you know, over the years, since 1905, we've had opiate epidemics that were followed by cocaine epidemics.
Right.
Now, this particular opiate epidemic's longer than we thought. But I don't know. We've got to keep our eyes open for cocaine down the road.
Well, Sharon Morello, I want to thank you so much for joining me today. And the people at Kodak, they always do a fantastic job. Love to have you back. You're a lady of wealth of knowledge since
thank you've
you. Only been a nurse since you were the age of two.
Age of two. That's
You're listening to Recovery Radio. I'm your host, John Tassone. We'll see you next week.
Do you struggle with addiction? If alcohol or drugs control your life, help is just a phone call away. Neighborhood Health Plan of Rhode Island covers many inpatient and outpatient treatment options for